go ahead and get started with the sermon then. So I was thinking about what I would speak about. I was going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth all week. And on Thursday evening, I landed. I'd been thinking about this anyway, been looking at it, and it's just, I'd actually been kind of pushing it off. I didn't want to give this particular message as of yet, or I had a different kind of a different take I was going to go with it. But then come Thursday evening, something came to mind. I give God the credit for that and which way to go with it. And so today I will actually be talking to you about prophecy. I don't speak a lot regarding prophecy. I don't even believe I actually went back and was trying to think and go back in my records. I don't believe I've actually spoken strictly on prophecy since I've been here. But when, you know, I felt like, well, with everything that's going on and such, I thought it might be a good time. There's many different ways that you can go with the prophecy message because of all that prophecy encompasses. It encompasses things that have happened in the past and also encompasses things that are going on now, of course, in the future. But it seems like when prophecy is mentioned, it seems that people's ears perk up. And whenever you say, well, I'm going to speak about prophecy, people are like, oh, well, why is that? Why is it that happens? Well, because prophecy is something that has been predicted to happen. Like I said, there's some prophecies that have been fulfilled, some that are being, and some that will. But in all of it, everyone wants to know the future, right? How many in here want to know the future? Yeah, pretty much everybody. Absolutely. Absolutely. But how do we understand prophecy? How do we decipher when things will happen? What prophecies should we be concerned about? Well, I would encourage all of us that the only prophecies that we should be concerned about are prophecies found in the Bible. The only prophecies, well, the only prophecies we should be concerned about are the ones that God has given to us. That's how I feel, because God is the author of them. God is the author of them. Let's go to start in Isaiah 46. I just kind of lay a little groundwork here. Isaiah 46, and we'll start in verse 3. Isaiah 46, verse 3. This is God talking. He says, "Listen to me, O house of Jacob, and all the remnant of the house of Israel, who have been upheld by me from birth, who have been carried from the womb, even to your old age. I am he, and even to gray hairs I will carry you. I have made, and I will bear, and even I will carry, and will deliver you." God is talking to the household of Israel. If he's talking to the household of Israel, he's talking to us, the spiritual household of Israel. He's there with us. And that's what he's trying to get at. I've been there. I'm there to take care of you, there to help you. But he says, there are times, though, that he says, you guys have turn from me, and you've equaled other things to me. And he says in verse 5, "To whom will you liken me and make me equal and compare me?" That should be alike. He says, "They lavish gold out of the bag and weigh silver on the scales. I hire a goldsmith, and he makes it a god." You know, the physical things of this life, they look to before they look to God. They prostrate themselves. Yes, they worship it. They bear it on their shoulders. They carry it. Set it in its place, and it stands, for in its place it shall not move. Though one cries out to it, it won't answer, nor save them out of trouble. But remember this, and show yourselves, men, and recall to mind, O you transgressors. Because just before that, he said, I've taken care of you. These things aren't going to take care of you. These physical things in life aren't going to take care of you. But I will, because I've always been there. Then he goes on to say, remember the former things of old. For I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me. Then he says, declaring the end from the beginning, I know the beginning, and I know the end. I declare it. He says, from ancient times, things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand. And who else would you want to take care of you than somebody who knows the future, who is established, who he even says declares the end from the beginning? He says, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all of my pleasure. All of it. There's only one God. That's what he's getting at. One God. And it is he that announces or makes known the end from the beginning, or the beginning from the end. God makes known certain things that will happen in future times. No one else. No one else at all can claim this. And that's what he's getting at. No one else can claim this. No one. Only God can claim this. There is none other like him, and his counsel only shall stand. And we are to believe only his prophecies that he has given through to his prophets, to his servants, that he is, and even Jesus Christ has declared, many prophecies and no one else's. You know, there are many things that he has declared that have already taken place. I mentioned that a little bit ago, but there are things yet to be fulfilled, many things that are yet to be fulfilled. And God has allowed us some, and I'll add some understanding of these prophecies, which I believe is amazing. It really is. When you talk about knowing the future, we've actually been given insight into the future. We have. We've been given insight into the future. And there are times we actually need to stop and consider what we have been shown. We need to, especially in times of uncertainty as which we live. We need to stop and we need to consider those things. We need to be aware of the markers. And that's what I want to actually look at today, are the markers God has granted us. Because there are markers. There's markers of prophecy. And these markers of prophecy are being fulfilled. And that actually shows you where we're at and where we're going. For a few weeks now, I've actually been thinking about this. I mentioned that. But I've been thinking about prophecy because of the things that have been mentioned to me. Questions that I've been asked it might have been one or two of you in here. But that doesn't matter. But there were questions that have been asked over the past few months pertaining to prophecy. So today I thought it would be good to discuss certain markers of prophecy yet to be fulfilled, which hopefully will clear any confusion, if there was any. You may not have any confusion whatsoever. So the title of the message today, I don't always remember to put a title to my message, but I did today. It's Markers of Prophecy. Markers of Prophecy. Like I mentioned, there are already many markers that we can go back and we can see a prophecy that have already been fulfilled. And like I said, there are many, and they are important. But I don't have time to go through those. There's many different times that we could go through that, but we don't have time to go through that right now. But today, the markers that we will look at are going to be prophecy yet to be fulfilled. Prophecy yet to be fulfilled. My whole purpose of the message is to hopefully clarify, like I said, and encourage us. It's hopefully to be encouraging as well. Because, as I mentioned, God established these. He may not have given us the dates, but he's given us insight into what these markers to how things and when things will happen. The definition of a marker is this. It's a person or thing that marks or something used as to indicate, a marker indication. So in other words, God has given us markers. He has given us certain indicators within the pages of the Bible that explain when certain things will take place or have taken place. And like I said, he hasn't given us specific dates of when things, future prophecies will be fulfilled, but he has given us insight into how those things will transpire. And one item in particular that's been on people's minds as of late, and when I say this, some of you may chuckle, but it's one of those things that's been on a lot of people's minds, is the mark of the beast. Anybody heard anything about the mark of the beast lately? Nobody? Well, there's been a lot of scuttlebutt about it. I've heard about a lot about it. I've had questions about it, but many articles are actually, and commentary have been published on this over the past few months as well. And for an example, I pulled some from about five different news agencies. I'm not saying they're reputable, I'm just saying they're news agencies. You have Washington Post, February 16th, 2021. Some evangelical Christians say COVID vaccine is mark of the beast. Anybody heard that? The COVID vaccine being mark of the beast, nobody's heard. I see a lot of heads nodding. Okay, absolutely. Reuters, March 2nd, 2021. Video shows scanners checking temperature, not vaccination mark or microchip. I'll read the beginning of the article. Social media users have been sharing posts which claim that a video of people having their hands scanned as they enter a market in a concert proves that vaccines brand people with the mark of the beast. I don't know. Newsweek, March 30th, 2021. Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's actually a U.S. representative from Georgia. Here's the title of the article. Marjorie Taylor Greene rebukes vaccine passports as Biden's mark of the beast. CNN, April 5th, 2021. Research executive, far-right groups pushing vaccine as mark of the beast. Then the South Florida Sun Centennial, one of the bigger news agencies in South Florida, April 10th, 2021. Florida evangelicals on vaccine, right thing to do or mark of the beast? I only picked news agencies that I thought you would know. I mean, these are, like I said, are well known. There were so many others, so many other articles, so many other things out there in headlines that look into this type of questions and or thinking. And I thought a few of them were funny. Kanye West, quote, coronavirus vaccines are the mark of the beast. Now, if he says it, it's got to be right, right? And then Bill Gates comments on COVID-19 vaccine inflamed mark of the beast worries in some Christian circles. Then this one, is the mark of the beast a chip, a vaccine, or something altogether different? Have any of you ever wondered what the mark of the beast is? Oh, I see hands going up. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm not going to go in to tell you what it is today because I don't know what it is. And we'll hit on that. But at the same time, there were so many of these articles, so many, 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 many more. And so many people have their opinion regarding the mark of the beast in the beginning of the Great Tribulation. I've seen it time and time again. I've had many questions in regards to it as well. Much is questioned about whether or not we are in the midst or the beginnings of the Great Tribulation. You know, it's like I said, there's been many comments in regards to that. Some actually say the vaccine is the mark of the beast. I've heard that time and time and time again. And some say, and this is funny, and many other leaders have been tagged as this as well. Some say that Joe Biden is the beast. But, and as I mentioned, many say the Great Tribulation has begun, and on it goes. So many ideas making so much noise, and they're all over the place. They're out there. I mean, all you have to do is go into Google and type in Mark of the Beast. 8 million and some odd articles. It's ridiculous. Are we in the Great Tribulation? Different articles come up about that. It's interesting. With so much noise and so many ideas, if we're not careful, we can actually be sucked in. We can be sucked into these different ideas of people, and that's what it is. It's ideas of people, ideas of men. So we've got to throttle what we allow into our minds. We've got to throttle that, govern it, because what we allow in will actually, in turn, affect our thinking. It always does. In that 1 Thessalonians 5:21, you can just write this down. We're told, test all things. Test all things. Hold fast what is good. The word good literally means what is better, what is honest, what is worthy. So we are to test and examine all things against what is honest. Against what is honest, what is worthy. In other words, we're to test or examine things against God's unchanging truth. That's what we're to do. So we must dig in, and we've got to prove it. We've got to prove it because there's a lot of chatter out there. There's a lot of noise out there, and we've got to be able to sort through it. We've got to know what to mute and what to listen to. We've got to. So it is God's truth that we must hold on to and examine everything against. Everything against, prophecy included. And to do that, what do? We go into God's Word. We go into God's Word, His Bible, and look at the markers, the indicators He has given to us in His Word. He has given us these indicators to help us understand or what is going on. That's what He does. And so we need to understand why God's Word says what God's Word says more and more, I feel. We need to understand the words that God is showing us, in those things that he explains to us in his word as this world spins further into a chaotic mess, because it is. It is going, it's like in a whirlpool, being sucked down. And it's happening ever faster. So God grants us these markers so that we can keep a focus on where it needs to be. And we'll touch on that a little bit as we get towards the end of the message. So where are we at in prophecy? Where are we at in prophecy? Are the beginnings of the Great Tribulation, are we there? Are we in the beginnings of the Great Tribulation? Could the vaccine or anything else out there be the mark of the beast right now? Could it? With what is going on and where we are, you know, can we answer that? Can we honestly say we know where we're at in that? Well, let's answer these questions today by looking at the markers that indicate where we are according to God's Word, because we can actually see that. We'll be able to see that as we go through this today. And maybe you're way ahead of me and you already know. But if so, then this will just be a refresher. But as we go through these, we're going to touch on many subjects that we aren't going to have time to actually go and break down right now anyway. But we will, I hope, as we go through the remainder of this year and then next, there's many subjects to look at. Like, for instance, the beast power. The beast power is the political, the economic, military beast power. Then the second beast, that's the first beast, the second beast, which makes up the religious power. And then the mark of the beast, the great tribulation, two witnesses, and maybe even the 144,000. We may touch on those today as we go along. But all of them are huge subjects of them by themselves. That's why I said these things we're not going to have time to be able to go in and explain. We may spend a little time on a couple of them, but the main purpose of the message today is just to look at the markers of prophecy, markers or indicators of when these things will transpire, or if they're transpiring, because God, through his word, shows us those things. Like I said, he doesn't give us dates, but he gives us markers. So to begin with, we need to turn to Matthew 24. And I would encourage you to, we've got really four different chapters in the Bible that we're going to go to. We have Matthew 24. There's a couple others that we'll go to as well, but we're going to spend most of the time in the message today in Matthew 24, Revelation 6, Daniel 7, and Revelation 13. So if you have any little markers, you might put them in there because we'll be flipping back and forth. But the first one, we'll start at Matthew 24. And we'll start in verse 32. Verse 32 of Matthew 24. Here, Jesus Christ, this is after, and we're going to go back into this here in just a little bit, but his disciples had come to him and wanted to know when these things are going to take place. But in Matthew 24, 32, after he's explained some of this, and he goes into it a little bit more after he says this, but right in the middle he says, "Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see all these things, know that it is near, at the doors. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation by no means pass away till all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away." You know, I wanted to go here first just to explain that just as we see, like we can today, even driving in, you can see all these trees that are producing leaves and blooms and such. And because of that, what do we know? Summer's near. We know that. It's a marker. It shows us that summer is near when the leaves start coming up on the trees just around the corner. And this is what Jesus Christ is explaining to the apostles, to his disciples. He's explaining to them, when you see these things happening, know that it is near, that these things are going to happen. And God says, my return, Jesus said, my return is near. All these things are going to transpire before my return. They will. And there's things that are going to happen. And he gives us kind of a chronological order of how they'll happen, and we're going to go into that here as we go along. And he says, when you see those things, know that it is near. So that's really something for us to think about as we go through this. When we see these certain things happening, we know that that is near, that that is near, that that is near. Do we know the dates? No. But we know by these markers that these certain things are going to begin happening. It's a given. God has prophesied it. When what God establishes, no man can change. Only God himself. So as we go through this, that's what I want us to understand, what Jesus Christ was explaining to his disciples. We need to understand as these things go about, as we see these different markers taking place, these things are near. And we can't get ahead of it. And too many people, they do. They go past these markers and they go straight to something else and pull from it. And I've seen people build doctrines over these things. And anyway, and it totally just destroys them as an individual. And as he said, Jesus Christ says in verse 35, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. So these things are established, and we need to recognize that and remember that. So we can take everything that we read in God's word, we can take it to the spiritual bank, if you will. We can take it to the bank. We will not know the day or the hour, and he actually goes about that and explains that afterwards. But we will know when things are near transpiring, seeing and experiencing the events that happen. So let's begin in Matthew 24, verse 1. Matthew 24, verse 1. Here we're going to actually flip in between Revelation 6 to Matthew 24, because I want to bring these things out as he's explaining them to his disciples. Matthew 24, verse 1. Then Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came up to show him the building of the temple. And Jesus said to them, do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left upon another that shall not be thrown down. In other words, this is all going to be destroyed. What it is that you see is going to be destroyed. Verse 3, now, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, tell us, you know, here you've just told us that all this is going to be destroyed. Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? They asked him both. When is the sign of your coming, and when is the sign also and of the end of the age? So Jesus answered them and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you. No one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and I will deceive many. Let's stop right there. Flip back to Revelation 6, because this coincides. Revelation 6, verse 1. Here we have the four horsemen, as we've tagged, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. It's actually the first four seals. These first four seals, and in the first one, this first seal that's opened, it says, now I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying with a voice like thunder, come and see. And I looked, and behold, a white horse. He who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. This is actually talking about false religion, because if you go back in the book of Revelation, you see where Jesus Christ is explained as having a sword. And here we have one, so this is a false Christ. And what Jesus Christ say back in Matthew 24, verse 5, for many will come in my name, in verse 5. Many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. Religious deception. He said, this is going to happen. Religious deception is going to happen. Verse 5 of chapter 24, Matthew 24, actually verse 6. So we see the first seal that coincides with Revelation 6, verse 1. Then Matthew 24, verse 6, and you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. In other words, you're going to see religious deception. They went through that in the first century church and beyond. And then the second seal, back in Revelation 6, verse 3. When he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, come and see. Another horse, fire red, went out, and it was granted to the one who sat on it to take peace from the earth, and that people should kill one another, and there was given to him a great sword. It coincides with what it was that Jesus Christ just mentioned back in Matthew 24, verse 6, and you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See, though, that you are not troubled. For all these things have to come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. It's been going on continually. Matthew 24, verse 7, the middle of verse 7. And then he says, and there will then be famines. Right there, that's actually the third seal, because if you go back to Revelation 6, verse 5, it talks about the third seal being opened. When he had opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, come and see. So I looked, and behold, a black horse, and on him sat a pair of scales in his hand, because of scarcity. And I heard a voice in the midst of a four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a denarius, three quarts of barley for a denarius. Do not harm the oil and the wine. In other words, there's going to be scarcity of food. So famine, he even tells them back in Matthew 24, verse 7, for there will be famines. And then he says pestilences and earthquakes. Right after that, that's actually the fourth seal. You're talking about disease outbreaks and natural disasters. You go back to Revelation 6, verse 7. When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, come and see. So I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and the name of him who sat on him was Death, and Hades followed behind him, the grave followed behind him. In other words, this has everything to do with death. And then he says, all these are the beginning of sorrows. All of these are the beginning of sorrows. But one thing that we seem to always overlook, and even Jesus Christ says in verse 8, all of these are the beginning of sorrows. I want to go back to Revelation 6. Revelation 6, because there's one thing that we seem to overlook from time to time, and we have to be careful not to, because it is actually the culmination of these first four seals. It's the culmination of them. Because they're writing right now, but they're going to grow more intense as we go along. We've witnessed all these things throughout the years, haven't we? Some have been worse than others. We've witnessed them. Many people have died. They've been deceived. Many people have been deceived. Many people have died from wars. They've died from famines. They've died from earthquakes, natural disasters, whatever it may be, pestilences and the like. Many people have died. And these are all markers. They're markers that Jesus Christ tells us about. But he says they're all the beginning of sorrows. But the one thing, like I said, that is actually a marker before the Great Tribulation actually begins is back in Revelation 6, verse 8. And sometimes we look over this, because he gives us another marker before the fifth seal is opened, just before the Great Tribulation. And just as the political, if you will, the political, economic, and military beast comes to power, full power. Revelation 6, verse 8. And the power was given to them over a fourth of the earth. This is at the end of verse 8. And the power was given to them. He's talking about all of them. It's going to culminate over a fourth of the earth to kill with the sword, with hunger, with death, and by beasts of the earth. They're given power to kill 25% of the earth. 25% of the earth. To kill with the sword, to kill with hunger, to kill with death, to kill with beasts of the field. A fourth of mankind. Have we experienced that? I don't think we have. Not at all. Yes, 25 million people died in Europe in the Black Death. Back when that happened. The population at that time, they say, was between, they're within 100 million people, 375 million to 475 million. If you were to take the 375 million, that's 6% of the world's population that died during the Black Death. Or the 40 million that died during World War I. World population was said to be at 1.7 billion at that time. That's just a little over 2% of the population. Then World War II, 70 to 85 million people perished, or about 3 to 3.5% of the world population, because the world population was estimated at 2.3 billion at that time. Today, the United Nations, as of April 21st, I'm not saying that this is an exact number, they say the estimate of the world population is 7.9 billion people. 7.9 billion people. 25% of the world population would be 1.975 billion people. And I thought, well, let me put that into kind of some context. Let's put it into perspective. Because the U.S. has 328.2 million people, residents, that live in the United States that are accounted for. South America has 422.5 million people. Mexico has 127.6 million people. Canada has 37.59 million people. And Europe has 746.4 million people. You tally that up, that's 1.66 billion people. You could wipe all of those off the face of the globe and still not hit 25%. That's a lot of people. So we see that the culmination of these four seals will lead. The wars, the famines, the pestilences, and death are going to be so great that 25% of the world's population will be destroyed. That hadn't happened yet. It hasn't happened yet. And this is the precursor, or the marker, if you will. When that happens, it is a marker to the beginning, the opening of the fifth seal, the beginning of the Great Tribulation. My personal opinion, and this is my personal opinion, is that prior to the Great Tribulation, the world is going to spin into absolute chaos. We can see it on the horizon. The winds are actually blowing, if you will. But from this chaos, 25% of the global population will die. Die from wars fueled by political, religious, and political conflict, disease epidemics, natural disasters, famine. Death is going to be everywhere. Like I said, you can take United States, South America, Mexico, Canada, and Europe and not even hit the 1.9, not even hit 25% of the world's population. You could add probably the Middle East into that and probably get real close, because the Middle East, I believe, is right at somewhere between 242 million people. A lot of people are going to die. But I believe from this chaos is going to arise a power. It's going to arise a power to unite countries from around the world to bring about, if you will, a utopia. That's their goal. A man's made utopia, a political and civil and a military might to save mankind. This power will be the first beast. It'll be that political, that economic, and that military system. And of course, we know it's led by a wicked ruler. But it will rise to power. Why can I say this? Well, let's dig in just a little bit, because there are multiple markers that come to light from this beast power rising. We just see that There are markers that happen. God has given us the if you will, the four first seals. He's given us an understanding. He even mentioned it to his disciples back in Matthew 24. And he says, these things are going to happen. And he says, these are the beginning of sorrows. And when they culminate, 25% of mankind is going to die, going to perish. And from that, then comes this beast power, Revelation 13. Let's go to Revelation 13. Start in verse 1. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads, 10 horns, and on his horns, 10 crowns. And on his head's a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power. Who is the dragon? That is Satan. Satan gave him his power, his throne, and his great authority. And I saw one of the heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and its deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled. It marvels, it says, and followed the beast. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast. They probably don't realize that they're worshiping Satan through this beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, you're actually worshiping Satan through worshiping the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Because he's so great. His military might is beyond anything they've seen before. And he was given a mouth. It says, speaking great things and blasphemies. And he was given authority to continue for 42 months. So he came to power. He was given power. This beast was given power for 42 months. What is 42 months? If you put it into years, 3.5 years. So this economic, this political, economic, and military system, if you will, this beast is going to be in power, is going to have reign. It's going to be the most powerful force on the earth for 3.5 years. 3.5 years. Then he goes on, he says, then he opened his mouth and blasphemed against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It is granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. You see, his power encompasses the world. It says, and all who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life, and of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. God says, you need to pay attention to this, because there's things that are coming from this. There are things that are coming, things that we need to understand. What is this beast power? What is it that's being brought out here? I just said it's some type of economic, political, and military system that's led by a wicked individual, very powerful. Will be a powerful individual. Let's go back to Daniel. Go back to Daniel 7. Because God actually shows Daniel what this is actually the culmination of. Daniel 7, verse 1. He says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and his visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came from the sea, each different from the other. I wish we had time to go through all of these. I'll just give you a quick reference over them all. It says, the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off. This is actually talking about Babylon. This is actually talking about Nebuchadnezzar. Remember whenever his power was taken from him? Remember whenever he was sent out to be like a wild beast for 7.5 years? Remember that? For 7 years? It says it went over him seven times. So for 7 years he was out there as a wild beast. His wings were plucked from him. His power was taken from him. It said he was lifted from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. So we see here this is talking about King Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian Empire, this first beast. The second, and suddenly another beast, a second, like a bear. It was raised up on one side. Raised up on one side. In other words, this is actually explaining to us that it would actually, the Persians had greater power than the Medes. This is actually, explaining the Medo-Persian Empire. And it says, and that's what it means by raised up on one side. One had more power than the other. It says, it had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. Those three ribs are three empires that this Medo-Persian Empire conquered. That's what that's representative of. I believe it's the Lydian Empire, the Babylonian Empire, and Egypt that they conquered. That's the second beast. The third beast, I look, and there was one like a leopard, which had on his back four wings of a bird, and the beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. This is talking about the Greek Empire. And how it was given as a leopard because how quickly it came to be. But it is these three different empires that is being shown here. And after this, I saw in the night vision, behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns. These 10 horns are representative of, if you will, the Roman Empire. That's what this beast is actually representative of, is the Roman Empire. But these 10 horns are representative of the different resurrections, if you will, of the Roman Empire. 10 times, on and off, 10 times. The 10th time is yet to happen. So I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one coming up, before whom three of the first horns were plucked away. So the first revivals of the Roman Empire didn't have a religious system backing it, but the last ones will. The last ones did, and the seventh one will as well, or the tenth one will, which will be the seventh that were in cahoots, if you will, with this religious power. It goes on to say, and there in the horn were eyes, like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words. This tenth last revival is yet to happen, and it will happen. And we'll go on and read a little bit more here in just a little bit, but before we do that, I actually want to go back to Revelation 13. Go back to Revelation 13. I told you we'd be flipping back and forth. But what I want to get at is the reason I brought these different beasts out is because what God was explaining to Daniel was these different kingdoms or these powers, they actually influenced. And they influenced the shaping of the Western civilization, the Western world as we know it. They have. The Babylonian Empire, the Medo-Persians, the Greeks, and the Roman influence. It has all shaped the world in which we now live, and thus the final beast power has the characteristics, that's why I wanted to bring that out, it has the characteristics of all of these beasts. Go back to Revelation 13, and in verse 2 you see where it says, "Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard." It says it was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. It has those same characteristics of what it was that came before them that helped shape, if you will, society and civilization. And it corresponds very closely. It corresponds with, not closely, it corresponds right with Daniel 7. And this characteristics that this has is it has the influence of the beast that came before it. The beast comes to power quickly. It does come to power quickly, because we read just a little bit ago that it lasts for 42 months. Its power does, for 42 months, and then will be destroyed. And we know God will destroy it. Jesus Christ will come and he'll destroy it. But at the start of the 42 months, what happens? What happens at the start of the 42 months? Well, the Great Tribulation begins. How do we know? Well, there's markers. There's markers. Another marker. Let's go back to Daniel 7. We were just there, Daniel 7, and let's go back. Verse 23. We didn't read this yet. Verse 23. This fourth beast. He's talking about this fourth beast that had come up. The one which is representative of the Roman Empire. And then after three successive kings, the first three, or emperors, they banded with a religious entity, as we know, the Roman Catholic Church. And this was a power that became very, very influential to the world, not just economically, but also religiously. And at the end time, that revitalization, that revival of that tenth and final time comes to be. In Daniel 7, verse 23, "The fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it in pieces. The 10 horns or 10 kings shall arise from this kingdom, and another arise shall arise after them, and he shall be different from the first ones. He shall subdue three kings, and he shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law." And then it says, The saints shall be given to his hand for a time and times half a time. Here's that same, what is that representative of? It's representative of literally 3.5 years. That's what that time, times, and half a time is representative of. It's 3.5 years. The beast power is given 42 months. How do I know this is when the great tribulation begins? Okay, it says right here that he will be given the power over the saints of the Most High. In other words, he's going to persecute the saints of the Most High. Well, let's go and let's look. Let's go to Revelation, back to Revelation 13. I know we're flipping back and forth, but it helps explain. Revelation 13, verse 6. Revelation 13, verse 6. There's another marker here that we need to be aware of. Because in verse 6 it says, then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. What is that representative of? What is it that he does? What is it that we're told is going to happen? And when Jesus Christ tells us this happens, he says, beware. Beware. Let's go back to Matthew 24. We're going to help explain this. Matthew 24, verse 9. They will deliver you up to tribulation. It says, and kill you, and you shall be hated by all nations for my name's sake, and then many will be offended, betray one another, and will hate one another. Many false prophets, he says, will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved, and the gospel of the kingdom will be preached to all the world as a witness to all nations, and then the end will come. Then he says in verse 15, therefore, you know all this. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoke of by Daniel the prophet, you can go back to Daniel 7, we can read about that. And he says, spoken by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. We have to understand that what God is saying, he says, when this begins, when this ruler, if you will, is over the beast power, comes in, and he starts, if you will, he sacrifices abominable things towards his God. This is the abomination of desolation. And this is going to happen after a temple or tabernacle is erected. Because what are the Hebrews trying to do, the Jewish people trying to do right now? They're trying to find a place, they have a place actually, that they're going to erect a tabernacle or a temple. It starts the sacrifices, the daily sacrifices once again. And what we're being told here, whenever you see the abomination of desolation, when you see this being come in, and if you will, blaspheme the tabernacle or the temple, it says, beware. Jesus Christ says, therefore, when you see these things, let him who sees them understand. Then those who are in Judea, let them flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything or out of his house. Let him not go back to the field, go back from the field, go back to get his clothes. In other words, you've got to flee. And there'll be a way made, no doubt. Because why? What happens? What is this a marker of? This is the marker of when the Great Tribulation comes fully into effect. That's what this is a marker of. It's a marker of when God's people are going to be persecuted terribly. Let's go back to Revelation 6. Revelation 6, we'll pick it up in verse 9. When he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held, and they cried with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord? Holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth. Then a white robe was given to each of them, and it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who would be killed as they were, it says, was completed. This is in verse 9 and 10 and 11. What this is representative of those is those who have been martyred. Those who have been martyred throughout the ages, those who are going to stay asleep. That's what it's saying. That's what God is saying here. Stay asleep until they are risen with their fellow saints, or to be killed as they were, killed because of the truth. How long will this last? 42 months. This will last 42 months. Do these all go together? Yes, they do. They go together. Who has power for 42 months? The beast power. Who will be persecuting the people of God? The beast power for 42 months. as long as the beast has his power. We see markers. We see a marker when the beast's power will arise. We see a marker of when the great tribulation will begin. And now we're going to see what also takes place after the rise of the beast. Revelation 12. After the abomination of desolation and such like that. Revelation 12. And verse 7. And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and the angels fought. But they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren who accused them before our God day and night has been cast out. And they have overcome him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And they did not love their lives to the death. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time. This is when things are going to get tight. This is when things are going to get tough. Because in verse 13, now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman. Who's the woman? It's the church. Who gave birth to the male child, but the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into a wilderness of her place where she is nourished. Get this, here we go, for a time, times, and half a time. What is that? 3.5 years. What is that? 42 months. 42 months. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood with which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. It's a flood of people. He says, and the dragon was enraged. Here, God, whatever the place of safety is, wherever it is, we don't know. But God is taking some of his people there, but not all, because it says, and the dragon was enraged with the woman, the church, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. How does this war against God's offspring, the church, intensify? Another beast arises. Another beast arises. All this is happening. It's quickly. Happening very quickly. And all of it, you know, what's interesting is, whenever you stop and think about it, really, to be honest with you, there's a lot of undercurrent going on right now with all of this. There is. Is it been revealed? Not yet. But things are there. Things are happening. And whenever the times come and these times of trouble really intensify and then the beast power arises, that's when all these things are really going to start falling together and things are going to be implemented. And that's what I'm trying to get at through all of this. Show us the markers, where we're at, what's going on. Daniel 7, verse 8. Go back to Daniel 7, verse 8. We already read this, but we'll read it again. He says, I was considering the horns, and there was another horn. I mentioned this. A little one coming up among them. This is that religious system before whom three of the first horns were plucked out. I'll explain that. And there in this horn were eyes of the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words. This is that second beast, Revelation 13. Go back to Revelation 13. The Bible flows together, and it builds upon itself. Revelation 13, verse 11. Then I saw another beast. Revelation 13, verse 11. Another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon, and he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. And this beast, get this, this beast causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast. Not him, the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast and who was wounded by the sword and live. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. This second religious beast actually causes, we just read, people to worship the first beast. You go, what? Yeah, absolutely. But you know, when this was written, if you go back historically and you look into this, when this was written, this would have actually made perfect sense. It would have made perfect sense because historically, Roman emperors often, when they died, they were deified. They're deified. In other words, they were exalted to God's status. They were exalted to God status, and after they died, they in turn, them becoming those gods, they were those gods for their former Roman citizens to worship. I found that interesting. But this is actually something that Nero did in the first century while he was still alive. He promoted himself as a god, and people were to worship him. And when they didn't, he persecuted them. He killed them. You can go back and you can read where in the first century, those who were actually first century Christians, Nero actually pitched with tar and used on stakes to light his gardens at night, which is sick. Well, guess what? Things like that are going to happen again. They're going to happen again. The religious beast will cause the world to worship the first beast, and when they don't, they will be killed. They will be killed. Then look what this religious beast also promotes, and he causes the world to succumb to. In Revelation 13, verse 16, we didn't read it. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark of the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who understand calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of man. His number, it says, is 666. Here we have the mark of the beast. This mark may be something that is physical or it may not be. We don't know. We don't know what it is. But what we do know is that the mark of the beast does not come on the scene until the religious system that works in conjunction with this political, economic, and military beast makes this mandatory. Doesn't happen until then. And we also know that this mark of this beast is directly involved with those who worship the beast. Directly involved. As we've seen, this is not just an economic issue. This is also, or a political issue, this is a religious issue. It's spiritual. It is a way of life that this first and second beast, these systems, if you will, that they live. And it is totally against God's way of life because they hate God's way of life. They instead worship the dragon, Satan. Those who defy these beasts that have combined their powers will be exterminated. This is where the great tribulation comes in, and this is where the place of safety comes about. This is where many righteous, the saints of God, will become martyrs. Do you see the markers? Do you see what has to go into place? Do you see what has to be established? Do we see how God has laid it out for us? Jesus Christ says, when you see these things, know that summer is near. These things are at hand. What we don't know what the mark of the beast is. It will be brought to us, and we will have to make a decision. The mark is not here yet. Prophetic markers show us this. What is another marker that will help us know when? What is another one? Revelation 11, right here in the book of Revelation. Let's go to Revelation, verse 1. All these markers that help us see when these things are on the world stage, we know these other things are going to be instituted. These things are going to happen. First, we have the world going into a climatic, chaotic mess where 25% of the world, this population, is going to die. We have a beast power that arises out of this. We have then also a religious, not only the economic power and political and military power, you now have a religious power, and they join forces, and now they're making this religious power is making those who are on the earth worship the beast, and he has now established that a mark must take place. What also is on the scene when all of this happens? Revelation 11, verse 1, then I was given a reed like a measuring rod, and an angel stood saying, rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there, but leave out the court, which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles. It's been given to the Gentiles, because we already know that they're going to blaspheme this, the abomination of desolations and such. And they will tread the holy city underfoot for what? 42 months. There's our 3.5 years again. And he says, and I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days. How long is that? 3.5 years. 42 months. They're going to be on the scene at this same time. See, God gives us these markers, the indicators of where we're at, where we're going, and what will transpire. And these are the two olive trees and the two lampstands standing before the God of the earth. And they will, it says, for 1260 days. And then they will die, and their bodies will lay in the street for 3 days, and then God will bring them back to life. Do we see the markers? Do we see them? I hope we do. There are things to happen before this beast power comes to be, before this political, economic, and military beast power arises, and before the religious beast power arises. Are things being put in place today for that to happen? Absolutely. I have no doubt about that. And there are things to happen before the two witnesses come on the scene. There are things to happen before the Great Tribulation begins. There are things to happen before the mark of the beast is pushed on us, in whatever fashion and means that is. So this means we can just sit back and take it easy and watch what's going on in the world, right? Because we've been given these markers. That's wrong. Not at all. Not at all. We don't sit back and just wait till these things begin. We're actually striving to be marked ourselves. To be marked ourselves. Ephesians 4, verse 30. Ephesians 4, verse 30. Just one verse here. And it says, "And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by which you were sealed for the day of redemption." It says God's Spirit seals you for the day of redemption. I want to go back to Revelation 7. Because God also seals the 144,000. Verse 1. I'm going to bring something out here after we read this. It says in verse 1, after these things, after the sixth seal and all these things come to be. It says, "I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, on the sea, or on any tree. Then I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels who had to whom it was granted to harm the earth and the sea, saying, 'Do not harm the earth, the sea, or the trees till we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads.'" I find that interesting, because where is this mark to be of the beast? On their foreheads and on their hands. And we're told here, the angel says, "Do not harm the earth, the sea, or the trees until we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads." This word "sealed" in both of these passages back in Ephesians and Revelation is the same word. And this Greek word is hard to pronounce. It's sophragizmo. Sophragizmo. S-P-H-R-A-G-I-Z-O. And it means to set a mark upon. To set a mark with a seal. God is going to put his mark on those who are his servants. Today as well. With his Spirit, that is his mark. We want to have the mark of God. That's what we want. That should be our desires, to have the mark of God, not the mark of the beast. And this mark of God will be obvious to those as time goes on and when the mark of the beast becomes to reality. Oh, how obvious it will become. I personally believe the mark of the beast has to do with thoughts and actions. Head, hand, has a lot to do with that. It could be a physical mark, I don't know, like I said. But those thoughts and actions of what this beast power is going to promote, are they not evident today? They are. Evident so very much today. A mindset and an acceptance of things that are totally against God. The mark we receive, the mark that we have received, or we will receive if we make that commitment with God, also has to do with our thoughts and actions. But ours is our way of life is to contradict this world's. Ours is to be that of godliness, to promote the fruit of the Spirit, the very Spirit that we will be, that we either are or will be sealed with if we make that commitment with God. You know, both of these marks are spiritual in nature. And why do I say that? Because one is of the spirit of the devil and one is of the Spirit of God. Revelation 14. I have two more passages. And then we will end this. Revelation 14. Revelation 14 and verse 8. It says, "Another angel followed, saying, 'Behold, Babylon has fallen, that great city, because she has made all nations drink of the wine of her wrath, of her fornication.'" There's a lot to bring out of that. We just don't have time to talk about it right now. But then a third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, "If anyone worships the beast in the image and receives his mark on his forehead or on his hand, he himself is going to suffer the same thing that this system, these beast powers, bring about." He says, "If anyone worships the beast and has his image and receives his mark on his forehead or on his forehead or hand, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation." It says, "He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and the presence of the Lamb, and the smoke of their torment ascends forever. And they shall have no rest day or night, and who worship the beast in his image, and whoever receives the mark on his name, of his name." That's the wrath that they will receive. But and then it goes on, it says, "Here is the patience," or in other words, the continuance or endurance. How are the saints? Here's the patience of the saints. How are the saints going to continue forward? Through and by God's Spirit, the very thing that they're to be marked with. Here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. That is their patience. That is the endurance and continuance, is through the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus Christ, all led by God's Spirit. So we're to continue forward doing what God is requiring of us. That's what it means to continue forward doing what God requires of us. We are to continue forward preaching the gospel as God's people, as his church, and preparing a people. No one knows the day or the hour when these things will take place. One thing that has been quite obvious over this past year is how things can happen so quickly. They really can. And like I said, I see, personally, just looking at the world scene, and all the different things that I've looked into and read, there is an undercurrent of this attitude that is going to become ever so prevalent, that is going to be promoted by the beast power. Things can happen quickly. The formation of the beast power, both politically and religiously, I believe, as I said, are being formed in the background as we sit here today. But they are not yet revealed. The world could go into utter and total chaos overnight. We know that. And how fast 1.975 billion people could be dead in short order. It could happen. And the markers that we just discussed could become a reality. So prepare we must. We must stay close to God. We must stay alert. We must not become consumed with the ideas of man. Instead, look for the markers God has established for us. He's given them to us. He wants us to stay focused. And he wants us to reject the things of this world. That's why he wants us to reject the things of this world, because the things of this world will cloud our judgment. It will cloud our focus. We must not allow the glit and glamour of the society to suck us in when we have to reject senseless teachings that cannot be proved with God's and through and with God's word. We must not allow rumors to take hold in our minds, but rather we must remember what? That God has shown us what will happen. He's shown us what will happen, and he has given us, as I said, these markers, these indicators to sort through the madness and the chaos of this world, because this world is becoming chaotic in nature. And it's throwing at a lot of things at us right now. Satan is very, very busy. We must prove all things by and through God's word. Stay focused on what God says we are to do. We are to live by every word of God. Stay focused on the promises that God has told us that we will receive if we overcome. That's what we're to stay focused upon. And if we stay focused upon that, the markers of God that he has established will become ever evident. They will. That's where we need to be. That's all I have today.